This podcast is brought to you by Local Silver Mint in Ware, New Hampshire. For the best selection of silver and gold, visit the Local Silver Mint showroom in tax-free New Hampshire today. Online at localsilvermint.com.
Sugar, spice, and everything nice. These were the ingredients chosen to create
The Grace Curley Show. Radio, TV, print, Grace Curley does it all.
She sings, she dances, she acts.
I'm waiting by the door for my Pulitzer.
She sounds hideous.
She's just the worst.
Yeah, she's a wacko.
She is the devil. I'm in hell.
Now, here's the millennial with the mic.
She still leaves me both breathless and speechless.
I love her.
She is the best.
Somebody will ask you to say Grace.
Grace Curley.
Welcome back, everyone. Joining us now is the senior writer at the Washington Examiner. We haven't had him on in a long time, too long. David Harsanyi joins the show. Thanks so much for coming on, David.
Hi.
All right, David, I want to start with a question for you on what happened over the last 24 hours. So Israel hit a major facility, a gas field in Iran. Iran then attacked Qatar. Trump claimed in a True Social, I'm going to read this to you, he claimed that we knew nothing about this particular attack. Later on in the True Social, he says, no more attacks will be made by Israel pertaining to this extremely important and valuable field unless Iran unwisely decides to attack a very innocent, in this case, Qatar, in which instance the United States of America, with or without the help of or consent of Israel, will massively blow up the entirety of the South Pars gas field at an amount of strength and power that Iran has never seen or witnessed before. What do you make of this entire situation? Because there are reports now out of Israel that the U.S. did know about this attack. Is this a little bit of good cop, bad cop with Israel and the U.S., or did we genuinely not know this was going to happen?
I find it implausible that we wouldn't know that that happened. And I think there's been now more reports from the American side that says that we knew that that would happen. It seems highly unlikely that Israel would attack a major oil. I'm not sure if it's just a refinery or whatever it is without the blessing of the American military, that no one's flying around Iran without the other side knowing about it. And definitely seems like good cop, bad cop to me. But, you know, we can't know for sure, but it seems like part of a strategy to show Iran what we could be doing and to pressure them into something. I'm not sure what that is, opening the strait, maybe negotiating. Who we're negotiating with is unclear to me, but that's what it seems like to me.
Yeah, and I would also, David, I would love your response to the latest news just broke this morning, and it was after kind of a tumultuous 48 hours of Trump really expressing his disappointment with our allies as far as securing the Strait of Hormuz. And then as he's hosting the Japanese prime minister, we find out that Japan and other allies are pledging their support to secure the Strait of Hormuz. What did you make of that negotiating or that strategy from Trump of saying, hey, if you guys don't want to help us with this, we could just leave you to it, and maybe we'll get out completely and then you can try to secure it yourselves. It did seem to work out that within hours now we're getting this supposed support from our allies.
Well, the Strait of Hormuz is more important to Europe than it is to us, and you know, overall, so it seemed weird that they wouldn't want to help with this part of the mission. It's not as if we're asking them to participate in strikes or anything like that. To me, it seems like more and more NATO is a one-way street. I know this includes Japan and others. So I am happy to see that they're moving forward. I mean, they should be helping us here. We help Europe all the time. People get mad when I talk about NATO in that way. But we help them during the Serbian War. We help them during their Libyan excursion, which I think was a bad idea. And we don't ask much of them. So the idea that they wouldn't help us here and help the world and help oil prices and economies essentially survive the next few weeks or whatever it's going to be seems like a no-brainer to me. So I'm happy to see that there was some movement there. We'll see what that means, though. I mean, it could just be that they don't want to upset Donald Trump and that they're not going to do very much. But we'll see. I don't know if that's the case.
Yeah, yeah, definitely something worth watching. I want to talk about Joe Kent here in a second, but before we dive into that, I'd be very curious to know what you make of the amount of noise a lot of these podcasters like Tucker Carlson and Megyn Kelly are making versus the amount of influence they actually seem to have on Republicans. Bhatia Ungar Sargon yesterday had this amazing piece about how these influencers don't seem to have a lot of influence. And there's a story from JL Partners. It's a survey. It shows 83% of likely Republican voters strongly or somewhat support Operation Epic Fury. So for as much distraction or as much as we hear about this infighting, the civil war in the MAGA base, it's actually a lot more black and white for people as far as supporting this or not than I think the Tuckers and Megyn Kellys would have you believe.
I think that's true. There is going to be, people who vote for Donald Trump and like Donald Trump are going to trust what Donald Trump's doing most of the time. So you have that's kind of embedded in the polling. In the same way, I think it's unpopular in general because people don't like Donald Trump on the left, and no matter what he does, you know, when you poll someone, you ask them, do you like what Donald Trump's doing? It doesn't really matter what comes next in the question, probably, right, for a lot of people. As far as the podcaster faction, I think it's right to say they don't have a tremendous amount of influence right now, but I do wonder what happens after Donald Trump with them. They obviously have some influence. They have pretty big, or maybe not influence, but they have pretty big audiences who listen to them and maybe are misled about what's going on in the world. I mean, Tucker Carlson lies constantly. He's just a complete propagandist. Megyn Kelly just follows his lead constantly. So there are a lot of younger people, I think, who listen to that and are probably misled. So I do wonder what that influence means in the future. I don't think there's any good coming from it, however small or large it is. So I think that's something to maybe look at. But yeah, right now, I don't think they have much say on foreign policy at all on the right.
Well, I want to play you a cut here. This is from Joe Kent. Obviously, he was in the news a lot this week, former director of counterterrorism. He resigned, put out a statement essentially saying that he thinks that we got into this war because Trump is being bullied or told what to do by Israel. He also made some comments about Israel getting us into the Iraq war. And so there was a lot there to unpack. But to no one's surprise, he ended up going on with Tucker Carlson. And I wanted to play cut 7, please, Taylor.
Was Iran on the verge of getting a nuclear weapon?
No, they weren't, you know, 3 weeks ago when this started, and they weren't in June either. I mean, the Iranians have had a religious ruling, a fatwa, against actually developing a nuclear weapon since 2004. That's been in place since 2004. That's available in the public sphere. But then also we had no intelligence to indicate that that fatwa was being disobeyed or it was on the cusp of being lifted. The Iranian strategy, it's actually pretty pragmatic. The Iranians are obviously aware of what's taking place in their region. And their strategy was to not completely abandon their nuclear program because they saw what happened to Muammar Gaddafi in Libya.
Okay, I think I think that gives enough of it. But David, now the FBI is conducting a leak investigation into Joe Kent. But that's a pretty hefty accusation to say the reason we're in this war actually doesn't exist. They were not going to have nuclear weapons because of their religious beliefs. I'd like you to respond to that.
Well, a few things. So I think we need to, the big question is how did this person that's so ridiculous, who's conspiratorial, who doesn't know what he's talking about, end up in the United States government?
Yeah.
First of all, he was investigated before he quit. I think he probably quit because he was being investigated. But his claims throughout that interview that Israel dragged us into the Iraq war when we have evidence that Israel said don't do it. He blamed Israel for the death of his wife, who was killed by ISIS, you know, and then he's talking about a fatwa. The Iranian Shias, the Twelvers, who he calls rational, who want to drag us into an apocalyptic war, don't have to follow a fatwa. They can, the Shia Islam, you can make promises just to deceive your enemy. There is zero, no one in the world thinks that the Iranians, no one rational thinks that the Iranians built a nuclear facility 300 yards under a granite mountain because they're not doing something they're not supposed to be doing. Then finally, this thing about imminence, like, oh, were they on the verge? Is it imminent? Why does the United States have to wait until minutes before someone attacks us to do anything to defend ourselves. It's clear that there was going to be a line of immunity with the ballistic weapons, and we have to move at some point soon. So I think this guy is a complete fraud, basically. I don't really know what else to say about him.
Yeah, and on this topic of getting into this conflict, something else that I've noticed is there's this pushback about polls, and Trump's constantly being asked about polls and about gas prices. And I'm not dismissing the fact that gas prices matter. It's a very visible thing. Everybody, for the most part, experiences them. But one of Trump's response, and I often critique his responses to certain things, David, but in this case, I really appreciated his response. Every time he gets asked about this, he says, I had to do what was right. Like, in other words, I'm not going based off these polls every day. This is something I thought we had to do, and so I did it. I didn't do it because I thought it was going to help us in the midterms or hurt us in the midterms. I just did it because I thought it was right. I'm curious if you think that's a strong case here, and if you're following these polls every single day.
I think it was a good response, but I do have to say, I don't think in general the response or the explanation for what we're doing has been great by the administration at all. You know, I think they needed to make up maybe a better case. I'm not saying they needed to tell us beforehand, but as we go along, I think they could be clearer. But yeah, of course, politicians shouldn't follow polls. The idea is just preposterous. I mean, you know, polls change every day. The Iraq war is popular, and then when it went bad, it wasn't. People, I think, in the end, Americans like when we are successful. If you ask them questions, you know, the way that you ask poll questions matter too. Like I said before, you ask, do you support Donald Trump's war against the Iranian people, or however the left wing asks these questions, or ask them this: do you support stopping the Iranian terror state from getting nuclear weapons? I think the polls would look very different. So you can't follow polls. You have to do what's right. I agree with him. And frankly, this is as popular or more popular than most things that Donald Trump does. This attack is more popular than tariffs, for instance. Should these people who are crying about this, telling him to follow poll numbers, should he stop tariffs as well? No, you should make a case beyond whether something's popular or not for whether it's good or not. It's probably, you know, there's a genuine debate of if we should have done this or not. But you don't have to get conspiratorial, and you don't have to rely on polling as your main argument. You should make your argument, you know, and then we can have the debate over foreign policy.
I have one more question for you, David. We're talking about these podcasters a little bit here, Tucker, Megyn Kelly. What do you think it is? Because there's been such a change. And even if you look at Joe Kent, I know you think he's a clown, and I would tend to agree with you. But if you look at his flip-flopping or the way that he has changed when it comes to Israel since 2020 and when it comes to Iran since 2020 versus now, there's this thing that seems to be happening on the right that is very concerning. And I'm curious what you think is driving that when it comes to some of these podcasters. Is it just views? Is it just likes? I know that we're a very click-oriented society. We like, you know, all the clicks and all the engagement. Is it money? Are people making a lot of money here, and so it just makes sense? Or is there something even worse happening when it comes to this kind of conspiratorial cuckooville area that we've entered into?
I don't know is the answer, I guess, because I can't bore into the souls of these people. I mean, Tucker has a lot of money and always has, so he doesn't need to be doing this for money, but maybe he is. I don't know why he does it. But what I do know is that it's a lot more exciting, especially for younger people, or especially for people who haven't really thought about these things deeply or read a book about them or aren't educated about it, to hear about all kinds of crazy conspiracies. It's more exciting to listen to than to talk about real history or how foreign policy really works. So I think they tap into an excitement, or also a kind of, it's fun to upset other people. It's fun to upset elites. It's fun to, you know, say something anti-Semitic and get a reaction from someone. I think it's dangerous because it's being normalized. It doesn't mean, you know, like we said before, that they have great influence right now. But again, it's not nothing. I see it every day. I mean, it's directed towards me sometimes. I don't, you know, it's ugly, and it's not really the way we should be interacting. But, you know, since the mainstream or establishment media or trust in it has completely collapsed, is a big vacuum, and there are a lot of people out there who fill it for people, you know, for conservatives who are bad actors. I don't think Megyn Kelly's a conservative at all, you know, really. And I think it's dangerous in the long run. I feel like there's been a pushback now, so hopefully we're headed in the right direction as far as their, you know, audiences go.
Yeah, I agree with you there. David Harsanyi, thank you very much. Everyone check out his work at the Washington Examiner. He does some great stuff there, some great articles. I was just reading recently about the Jones Act, which you guys should all check out. So go to WashingtonExaminer.com to read more about that. If you've noticed, the real estate for sale signs are popping up more and more. Well, not only that, but some of these signs are in the ground so long that they start falling over. And there's nothing worse than a piece of real estate sitting around. Everyone starts talking about it. Oh, that hasn't moved in a while. I wonder what's going on there. Is something wrong with the house? Why doesn't anyone want it? You don't want that kind of stigma around your property. What you want is a JJ Manning auction, because they don't go down, they only go up. Your property is sold and closed before the sign has a chance to wobble. For 50 years, JJ Manning has created competitive bidding environments, allowing the market to quickly speak. In the JJ Manning arena, there are no negotiations, only concrete auction terms. So don't list your property for sale because that's what your neighbor did. List with JJ Manning for an auction and set your property apart from the masses. JJ Manning has auctions for Howie and Gray sellers coming up in Claremont, New Hampshire, Braintree, Mass., and Walpole, New Hampshire. You sell as is and contingency free. And if you have any commercial, residential, or land to sell, contact Charlie Gill at 800-521-0111. Plus, traditional listings are required to allow a home inspection, but real estate auctions are exempt from this new rule here in Massachusetts. So that's another great reason to call JJ Manning, or to call Charlie Gill specifically at 800-521-0111, or visit jjmanning.com. We'll be right back.
The Grace Curley Show will return. This is the Grace Curley Show.
Nine78 says, Grace, did you see Trump's response to the Japanese reporter about why he did not inform Japan about Iran? Yes, 978. We get everything, okay? We're the first stop, so we already played it. But I'm glad you saw it, and it was a pretty poignant response from Donald Trump. I don't think he was trying to cause waves. Like, here's the thing about Trump. Trump says exactly what everyone's thinking. I don't think oftentimes he realizes how much chaos it's going to cause, just because our...
Hey, why didn't you tell me about Pearl Harbor?
Yeah, just because our media is deranged. That's the only reason. He's not saying, most of the time, he's not doing or saying anything that doesn't make sense to most people. It's just the media is so reflexive, and they're, I mean, think about it. Yeah, they're all shocked he said this to the Japanese reporter. And you know what they were shocked about an hour before? Was that Pete Hegseth asked Americans to pray for our U.S. service members. That had Margaret Brennan like, what? What's going on here? He asked people to get on bended knee and pray? So it doesn't take a lot to shake the foundation for these people. Things that don't shock them. Men becoming women. Women becoming men. A president whose son is as corrupt as can be, selling paintings to foreign adversaries. A president who's getting lost in a closet, sticking his face in a bowl of ice cream. A vice president who is just laughing and talking about the moon. That didn't rattle these people at all. Billions of dollars worth of fraud for imaginary kids at a Somali daycare. That does not rattle them at all. But saying, hey, everyone, hit your knees and pray for our U.S. servicemen, for our men and women, our troops that are protecting us. Then all of a sudden, pearls clutched. They start, where are my pearls? I need my fainting couch. What's going on? Trump said to a Japanese reporter that they didn't warn us about Pearl Harbor. This is the outrage du jour. What do you think, Taylor? The comment about Pearl Harbor, or the two scoops of ice cream, as reported on by, I think that was it Leslie Stahl? Is it going to be the two scoops, or is it the Pearl Harbor comment? What is more offensive to the media?
Ooh.
Two scoops was, at the time, like, we make a joke about it now. At the time, that was a bombshell. That was a bombshell. That was right around, like, the koi pond bombshell. You know, he fed the fish with the he almost killed them. He overfed the fish. So I don't know.
Two scoops because they weren't used to him yet.
Yeah, they've had time now. All right, when we come back, we're going to do the poll question. I have an update on a horrific story out of Iran. Stay with us.
The Grace Curley Show is on the air.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. Let's do the poll question here. Today's poll question is brought to you by the Eden Pure Thunderstorm OxyLeaf 3 Air Purifier. BOGO is back. Get ready for allergy season now. Go to EdenPureDeals.com and use code GRACEBOGO to buy one Thunderstorm and get another for free. That's EdenPureDeals.com, code GRACEBOGO. Taylor, what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
Today's poll question, which you can vote in at GraceCurlyShow.com, is Joe Kent told Tucker Iran was not close to getting a nuclear weapon. Do you believe him?
No.
94% say no.
No, and now, according to reports, he could be under an FBI investigation for these leaks. I agree with David Harsanyi that it's very concerning that this person was the director of counterterrorism. Like, reading just that original statement on his decision to resign, which now I know is clouded by whether or not he was already under investigation. Maybe he was trying to beat them to the punch. But either way, the fact that he was this involved in our government, in this administration, does not sit well with me. And the other thing I would add in here is his reasoning, Taylor, for why he doesn't think Iran was creating or had access to nuclear weapons is that it's their religious beliefs that would bar them from doing that. He seems to have a lot of faith in what he's being or what the Iranian government, the Iranian regime wants people to think. Like, it seems like a lot of these talking points that they're sending out, he's buying them hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah, he probably believed all the numbers out of Gaza of the people that were killed.
Yeah, because listen to this. This guy, Joe Kent, now ex-counterterrorism director, he wants us. And Taylor, can you just play the cut of him? I don't need the entire thing. I just need him explaining the fatwa.
On the verge of getting a nuclear weapon.
No, they weren't, you know, 3 weeks ago when this started, and they weren't in June either. I mean, the Iranians have had a religious ruling, a fatwa, against actually developing a nuclear weapon since 2004.
Yeah, so they've had a fatwa against developing a nuclear weapon, but that fatwa, what else? Is there anything else that's preventing them, I don't know, from killing 40,000 of their people? They just don't seem like, it doesn't seem like a group, whether it's the Ayatollah, whether it's any of these clerics, whether it's the head of the Basij, it doesn't seem like a group that's really being moved one way or the other by their, you know, oh, well, we're not allowed to do this, we're not allowed to do that. You know, our religion says we can't do this. Does the religion say anything about executing a 19-year-old wrestler? That just came out today. It says Iran executes 19-year-old champion wrestler and two others in horrific public hangings. So I'm sorry if I have a hard time believing that, like, developing nuclear weapons is where these guys supposedly draw the line. Doesn't really track from what I'm reading. It says Salel Mohammadi, a rising star from Qom, was allegedly tortured to confess to the capital crime of waging war against God, with the teen executed without a fair trial, according to human rights groups. This just broke today. It says his execution was a blatant political murder, part of the Islamic Republic's pattern of targeting athletes to crush dissent and terrorize society. That was a member of the human rights Iranian combat athlete Nima Far. It says Mohammadi, along with fellow protesters, were accused of killing two police officers with knives and swords during the January protests, according to Iranian state media. Despite appeals from the U.S., the protesters were found guilty and executed by Tehran. Amnesty International slammed the executions, alleging that the men were denied adequate defense and forced to make confessions. The humanitarian group said the trio were pushed through fast-tracked proceedings that bore no resemblance to a meaningful trial. And now this 19-year-old champion wrestler and two others have been killed in public hangings. But I'm supposed to believe, according to our counterterrorism director, our former counterterrorism director, that this same regime stayed away from nuclear weapons because they thought that's just too much. That goes against our religious beliefs. You know, that we can't get into that. But public hangings, they're not as sensitive to. It's just, I don't know how much you can buy from these Iranian officials. There seems to be a lot of people in our media right now who are very open and willing to giving the Islamic Republic's regime the benefit of the doubt. Like, they're very open to giving the IRGC a lot of leeway. And, hey, like, you know, let's hear them out. This is what they're telling us. So let's listen. I'm a little bit more skeptical, needless to say. I will say the Mossad is telling people in Iran, hey, if you see any of these people, you know, we talked about the three leaders, not including the Nepo baby Ayatollah impotent son, but three other leaders from the IRGC who were killed just this week in missile strikes by Israel. And now they're telling people, Taylor, on the ground, hey, if you see anybody, let us know, take a picture. In other words, like, we're picking people off here. So if you can spot someone and tell us, that would really help. And when you're in a country where people don't want you to take out their leadership, that could be very different. But there's, if you're one of these leaders, you got to be very paranoid, because you just had to crack down on about 40,000 protesters who hate your guts. And now the U.S. and Israel, the most powerful militaries in the world, are coming at you, and they're looking for help from the people who you just spent the last couple months brutally beating and murdering in the streets. All to say, the walls are closing in. Now, I did want to play a cut here. I want to, you know, we can talk about this stuff all day long, and the day does get away from you, but I would be remiss if I didn't play a little bit of sound from the people's president, Kamala Harris. In her mind, she's president of the United States. She's been doing the media circuits for a while, Taylor. I don't know if this is still for her book. The last time I reported on Kamala, she was canceling her book tour in California. And I think, and her book is 107 days, for anyone who forgot, that amazing 107 days of her campaign that led to her astounding defeat by Donald J. Trump. It was 107 days of vibes and joy and burning through money. And she was supposed to have a couple of book stops in California. But then, and at first, Taylor, we talked about it because I said, who's going to these? Like, they couldn't get the asses in the seats. That's probably why they had to cancel. No. It turns out the California taxpayers were footing the bill for her security detail on this book tour. And that's what kind of brought a lot of these stops to an end, because it started to come out that some of these officers assigned to Kamala Harris might be being paid by taxpayers. It says California taxpayers, this is from the New York Post, have been footing the bill for Kamala Harris's security team as she tours the nation promoting her book about her failed $1 billion presidential campaign. Former vice presidents usually receive federal protection for 6 months. President Joe Biden extended the protection through July 2026 at Harris's request before the Trump administration canceled it. So that's what's going on with Kamala Harris. But she's still still stopping in to talk to media outlets and tell them, you know, just like she did at Jesse Jackson's funeral. She's such a classy lady. At his memorial, she said, I don't want to say I told you so, but I told you so. And now she's going on these podcasts and she's talking about how she outsmarted Donald Trump. Can I have cut one, please?
I was aware of my opponent's strategy and I wasn't about to fall prey or fall into those traps. And part of his strategy and those around him was to try and take me off our game and message. And I wasn't about to be distracted by those flames that he was trying to throw to get me away from what my highest priority, which was talking to people about the economy and their well-being in terms of their financial well-being. And that's, so I understood the game that was being played. And I made a decision that I wasn't going to get played. And
chestnut checkers, got it.
Chestnut checkers.
Yeah, three-dimensional chess, I'm telling you. You know?
Three-dimensional chess. I have to throw out the obvious here, which is, where to start? You weren't getting played. You saw what Trump was trying to do. He was trying to throw you off your game. And you're sitting here now. We're in March after this disastrous loss. You lost all seven swing states. You burned through $1.5 billion. You left the DNC in arrears. They had no idea what to do. You didn't have to run a primary. You still lost in such a blowout fashion that most people had their jaws on the floor on election night. And you're sitting here today telling us that you outsmarted this man, that you didn't fall for his traps, that you didn't get played. Like, if this is Taylor, if this is her version of outsmarting Trump, then I hate to see what would have happened had she let Trump get the better of her. Because right now, as she sits with these podcasters and these drag queens and she sits down and talks to people, if this is her winning, I shudder to think what she would consider losing.
Yeah, not a great look. You lost. You got played. You know, you say all you want that you were thrown into this too quickly and you didn't have enough time to prepare, but you can't at the same time also claim that you were strategizing and, you know, you were the one that was really at the wheel and you were outsmarting somebody else while also claiming that you were completely unprepared. It's both cannot be true.
And I would argue that a lot of the things Trump did during that campaign were very effective at throwing her off her game, because it was a lot of stuff. Like, she's very comfortable talking about nonsense, right? She's very comfortable in low-risk situations, talking nonsense, making up word salad. She's not very comfortable. Like, she didn't want to go to the Al Smith dinner. She doesn't want to do these big interviews. She doesn't want to debate. She's not as comfortable with that. She's not as comfortable with, you know, having to prove that she can back things up with facts or that she has a plan or that she knows what she's saying. But she's comfortable in these low-risk situations. And what Trump was able to do pretty brilliantly is he was able to take a lot of the fluff that she would throw out there and make that a problem for her. Perfect example being the McDonald's. That was just something that she thought, oh, this is folksy. This is fun. This will relate me to people. This is something I can talk about. I can't really talk about Iran. I don't know much beyond don't. I can't really talk about the border. I was the border czar. I didn't show up. But I can talk about how I worked at McDonald's. That would be fun. That's light.
Mr. President, you actually have worked at McDonald's now.
Now I have worked at McDonald's. I've now worked for 15 minutes more than Kamala. Okay. She never worked here. I've now worked 15 minutes more than Kamala.
Yeah, and so with those things that any other Republican would have let go and said, oh, let her have that. You know, I'm going to focus on policy. I'm going to focus on all these other things. He was like, no, this is what she's running for. This is what she's running towards, is this stupid, light stuff that no one's going to call her on. I'm going to call her on it. I'm going to take that away from her. And then she's really left with nothing. And so, you know, to look back on how Trump won this, I actually think that it was by distracting her. It was by throwing her off her game. It was by making her understand just how unprepared she was for this role. And it wasn't hard to do, though, I should say. I can give Trump as much credit as I want. But when you send someone on The View and they get a question by Sonny Hostin who says, what would you have done differently than Biden? And you don't come up with anything. I don't think it really matters what Trump was working on behind the scenes. You were able to kind of sabotage your own campaign. And in that sense, you deserve a lot of credit. When we come back, I want to talk about the city council here in Boston, because they've got a new idea cooking up. We're going to talk about it. Letting non-citizens vote. You know, it's one of those things that you were always told is never going to happen. It's all fake. It's something Grace Curley talks about all the time, but don't worry about it. Well, now, Boston City Council is floating letting non-citizens vote amid federal immigration crackdown as a way to stick it to Donald Trump and to all of the people who voted for him to deport illegal aliens. The Boston City Council thinks it's a good idea to just let...
Oh, God, let them. And then have the federal government arrest all of those counselors on grounds of treason. Please.
Well, we'll talk about that, Taylor. That's how we'll end the show today. Since now I know you're so interested in the topic, I'll give you some more details when we come back. In the meantime, though, right now I'm here to give you some meat, and that is Omaha Steaks. There are so many different kinds. You know what kind of steak I love, Taylor? I'm actually really partial. I talk about the filet here a lot. I love a ribeye.
Ooh.
I think I like a ribeye. That's probably my favorite kind of steak. But with Omaha Steaks, there are so many different kinds of steak to choose from. And if you're listening to this and you're saying, I like a steak occasionally, but, you know, I can't eat a steak more than once in a while, that's okay. They have chicken. They have sausage. They have hot dogs. They have hamburgers. They have seafood. If you're looking to really health things up and you want to take a new turn on things, you can try a little seafood. They have sides. They have so many options for you to create delicious lunches and dinners and protein-packed meals where the quality is amazing, the price is right, and the effort level can be very minimal because you got this stuff packed away in your freezer. You don't have to panic, Taylor. Like on a Tuesday night when 5 o'clock hits and you start thinking, what are we going to eat tonight? You don't have to. The grocery store doesn't have to enter your mind. All that has to enter your mind is, what can I get on the grill?
Yeah, it's so easy. It's delivered right to your door. You just throw it in the freezer, whatever you want, maybe the next couple of days, you throw in the fridge to thaw out, and boom, you've got steak, protein, chicken, fish even for days, and you don't have to worry about any of the selections at the grocery store, what the pickings are like, what the quality of the meat is. Everything is assured through Omaha Steaks. The fantastic quality that they've produced for many, many years is shipped right to your door.
Yes, and right now with the 50% off the world's best everyday protein, if you go to omahasteaks.com, and you can get 50% off of their semi-annual sale, but you can also get an extra $35 off when you use code GRACE at checkout. That's right. You can combine those coupons, baby. You get the 50% off for the semi-annual sale, whether you're sending a gift to a friend, you know, across the country, or if you're just sending some delicious meat right to your own door. It's 50% off with the semi-annual sale. And use promo code GRACE to get that extra $35 off. Terms apply. See site for details. Yum. Tell us what you order, and then tell us how you cook it up. I wanted to just mention here that 617 says, isn't a chessboard and its pieces three-dimensional? Hey, just appreciate the interview between Kamala and those podcasters. I'm sure there's more to come in the future. I think she's just starting. I do think she's running again. We can talk about that on another show, but I'm getting that vibe. I'm getting that vibe that she really is buying into this idea that it should have been me. I got robbed. We'll talk about it. When we come back, though, Boston City Council floating the idea of letting non-citizens vote. We'll talk about it when we come back.
Follow Grace on X at G underscore Curly. This is the Grace Curley Show.
The Boston City Council is weighing legislation that would grant immigrants with legal status, but without full citizenship, the right to vote in local elections. Referencing the federal immigration crackdown, Julia Meha, the councilor, introduced she was rehashing the effort to grant voting rights to non-citizens to elevate their voices at a time when immigrants are facing increasing attacks. I wanted to read, Taylor, this part of the story in the Boston Herald. It says, the measure passed the city council in late 2023 over legal concerns raised by then-councillor Michael Flaherty, full disclosure, relative of mine, married to my first cousin, and logistical challenges flagged by the city's elections department. Now, according to early looks at this, there's going to probably be some opposition. And I wanted to read this quote from Councillor Ed Flynn. He said, although I have a strong record in support of immigrants in Boston, I firmly believe the right to vote is a unique privilege reserved for U.S. citizens, including those who have gone through the extensive citizenship application process. Racist. He's about to be accused of being a racist. That is the most sensible thing I've heard come out of the city council in a long time, Ed Flynn. prepare for the backlash. Have a good night, everybody. Tune into Howie Carr. He's coming up next. I'll see you all tomorrow for our Friday show.